This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hi, this is Dave Musial, owner of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. Do you have a plumbing emergency? Call Four Seasons. An electrical emergency? Call Four Seasons. A heating or cooling emergency? Call Four Seasons. Same day hot water tank installation needed? Call Four Seasons. Need a whole home generator? Call Four Seasons. We guarantee same day installation on all heating, cooling, plumbing, and electrical needs. And no extra charge for nights, weekends, or holidays.
For all the right reasons, call 866-4-SEASONS.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's start with the weather here. If you're just waking up for the first big weekend of Mardi Gras and you're getting ready to go set your little personal porta potty up, which you're not supposed to do, and I've never really seen these things, but Tim, have you ever seen a personal porta potty that they set up on the neutral ground? It's a mini tent, but does your head stick up out of the top or not? Are you all enclosed in it? Because I've seen boats where they have a supposed restroom on it or bathroom on it, but it's so small that the only thing that's enclosed is your neck below, and I just can't imagine being on something as small as a boat. I'm not kidding you. I've seen this. Being on something as small as a boat, trying to take care of nature while everybody on a boat is there looking at you, and you know that they can't see anything that's private, but your head, I just don't understand how that could work. 28 degrees in Slidell right now. 30 degrees in New Orleans. We're off to a cold start. Could be a cold day. Highs of only 49, 56 tomorrow, but then Sunday, not looking good at all. Rainy and cold the entire day with highs of 53 and about a 90% chance for showers throughout the day. So I think we're talking about a washout that's terrible for the parades that are scheduled, but we'll try to find out more from Peyton Malone or some weather person in the future. We'll also talk to we'll also talk to Arthur Hardy, founder of the Mardi Gras Guy. Jeff Palermo joins us now, the WWL.com columnist, to talk about LSU baseball. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing well, Tommy. How about yourself?
You know, I couldn't help but think with the Tigers playing Omaha, if you can't get to Omaha, bring Omaha to you.
Right. It's almost like if you can't beat them, join them, right?
I started to make another reference about moving a mountain, but that's liable to get me on some type of death list somewhere, and I don't want to do that at all, that old saying. So let's talk about these Tigers. What's been Jay Johnson's approach so far?
Well, he's been playing a lot of players, and, you know, the competition has allowed them to do that. I mean, Purdue Fort Wayne is not a very good team. Southern is a lower class team as well, as far as talent wise, and so it's given them an opportunity to go out there and play a lot of players. And there's a lot of depth on this team, and you're still trying to sort out who could be the guy you're going to count on in right field, who's going to be counting on a designated hitter and catcher. And the thing is, as Jay Johnson talked about it yesterday, even though he's substituting a lot, if you would, there's really no drop-off, or there hasn't been. But it's still early. We'll see what happens when competition really ramps up. And when you look ahead to this weekend, Omaha, once again, is not a big test. Tulane swept them last weekend. They're picked to finish third in their conference, the Summit League. They haven't had a winning season since 2019, so it should be another weekend where Jay Johnson gets a chance to evaluate. You're at least playing another team, And really the competition as of right now is not so much the opponent, it's just the players within themselves as they fight for at-bats, playing time in the field, and fighting for the opportunity for the pitchers to be a starter or a guy that Jay Johnson can rely on in high leverage situations.
When it comes to Jay Johnson's called in college, I'm just a little bit confused here. Is it manager or coach? What's the nomenclature?
He's called a coach. Yeah, they don't call him a manager in college.
But when it comes to managing the season, the college baseball season, as I understand it, SEC plays on play starts on March 14th, right, with Missouri?
Yes, yes.
So when it comes to managing the college baseball season with an eye toward getting to Omaha in the late spring, early summer, is he going about it the right way? Is now the time to like, for example, not playing when it's too cold? No, we don't need to do this. Is now the time? Do that kind of thing? Treat it like a preseason or training camp almost, and then get ready for March 14th in Missouri?
Well, he's got a lot of talented players, and there's a lot of guys that deserve playing time. But when it, you know, once we get into late April, early May, I would imagine he's going to settle in on, you know, a core group of guys as far as position player wise, you know, 10 guys or so that he's really going to count on. And then there's going to be four or five guys that really feel like they should be playing and they're not. And, you know, he kind of saw that with, for instance, you know, like a guy like Paxton Kling last year, didn't get off to a good start. He was expected to be your starting center fielder all season long. He doesn't get off to a good start, and then he loses his, he loses playing time. He loses his starting spot on the field, and he ends up transferring at the end of the season. I mean, that's kind of what happens. But Jay knows he recruited all these guys. He's got an idea of how to use them and potentially where to use them. So right now he's doing exactly what he should be doing. He's given a lot of guys a chance to get out there and play. As he said, you know, shake the newness of the season off, get those, you know, get that first at bat out of the way, or get those first few at bats out of the way, that first inning out of the way, and try to get into some sort of routine. You know, they got a bunch of games coming up here now. They're going to be playing 4 days in a row, weather permitting on Sunday. They might have to play a doubleheader on Sunday or Saturday. Don't know that yet, but, you know, looking at the forecast, that's what it kind of tells you. And then they're playing Nichols on Monday, and then it's off to Texas to play four games. So he's trying to evaluate a lot right now, and, you know, he'll keep evaluating, really, I think. But, though, when you get to towards late April, that's when you kind of want to have a set. You kind of want to have an idea. And there's going to be injuries along the way, and certain guys are going to slump, and some of this is going to be figured out for you. But, you know, right now, there's a lot of guys that deserve playing time, but there's, you know, only eight positions on the field, and then you got pitcher and catcher. So they got a lot more than that. I mean, look, he's played 20 guys, 20 different position players so far through 4 days. So that gives you an idea of just the depth and the amount of players that he's trying to get in there and to evaluate.
But if the goal is Omaha, the city in the College World Series, not the team coming to town this weekend, then now's the time to let all that shake out, right? You drop a game here, you drop a game there. That's not the point. The point is seeing who plays where and what the best lineup is. Accurate?
Right, exactly. Exactly. This is to kind of find out who you can count on. And you wish the competition would be a little tougher. I mean, Jay Johnson talked about it yesterday. Purdue-Fort Wayne was a team they had to get in there at the last minute, basically, because they had another team that dropped out in September, and they were almost forced to play on the road, was LSU this opening weekend, and Jay didn't want to do that. So they end up having to basically settle in on Purdue-Fort Wayne. So I know there's maybe a little mumbling about the scheduling as far as who he's scheduling in the preseason, but as they say, Tommy, it takes two to tango, right? You gotta have a team agree to want to come down to Alec Box Stadium, and you know, some people want to make sure they try to pile some wins early on and don't want to come down to the box and potentially lose a series or get swept or something like that.
Yeah, but the again, you got to keep your eye on a prize, which is like you're saying, April and May, and then moving on to the city of Omaha, not the team. 6:24, time for traffic now. WWL. 6:28, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network news director, talking about LSU baseball. They're taking on Omaha tonight, this afternoon, really, 4 o'clock start. And we'll have the action for you here on our sister station. More on that. But, Jeff, with the time that's left, pregame at 3:30, I should mention, Jay Johnson's talked about small ball, gorilla ball, whatever you want to call it, later on in the season, Omaha. How do you determine what type of ball you're going to play? Is it about whom you have, about who you're playing when? They're pitching, you're hitting. Take me through all of that.
Well, a lot of it is on your personnel, right? I mean, you got to have some home run hitters. And, you know, one of the question marks on this team is, you know, Jared Jones is going to hit somewhere around 30 home runs this season if he's healthy. But who else is really going to supply the power on this team? And that's a big question. You know, Ashton Larson and Ethan Frey, two guys that are battling for some playing time, either at right field or designated hitter. They've hit home runs here recently. Daniel Dickinson's hit a home run. It looks like they got some other guys that could probably hit somewhere maybe between 15 and 20 home runs. But, you know, I think last year's team was a little bit more power-oriented because you had Jared Jones, you had Tommy White, you had a guy like Hayden Travinsky. But now you have a leadoff hitter in Chris Stanfield who could run a little bit. You know, Cario can run a little bit. Daniel Dickinson can run a little bit. I think this is going to be a team that's going to be a mix of both. They can hit the home run, but they're also going to be a little more aggressive on the base pass. I think really the last couple of seasons, even going back to the national championship season, they had such good hitters. They didn't want to really necessarily run into outs. They didn't want to potentially spoil big innings by making, you know, trying to steal base and getting thrown out and all that kind of stuff. So they really relied on the big inning because they had some guys, they had some outstanding hitters, especially 2 years ago. But this year, I think they're going to be a little bit more active on the base pass.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate your time. Have a great weekend. Go Tigers. Pregame 3:30, first pitch 4 o'clock, and that's all going to be on this afternoon, our sister station, the Bet 92.9 FM, 1350 AM, and, of course, the Odyssey app. Then Sunday, Tiger Baseball, if the weather allows, will be on WWL 105.3 FM and 870 AM. Pregame 12:30, first pitch at 1. Weather permitting, a little bit late time for WWL First News. For that, we go to the patient, Dave Cohen. 6:46, 14 till 7, Friday morning, February 21st. First big weekend of carnival coming up, although I don't mean any disrespect to all the carnival activities that have happened prior to today. And the problem is, cold tonight. You have to bundle everybody up if you go to parades tonight, but that's no big deal. It's dry, right? And then you're going to have, to bundle everybody up tomorrow when you go to the parades. That's no big deal. The problem is Sunday when they're talking about a 100% chance, well, not 100%, about a 90% chance for showers, cold, rainy all day long. I would just say, Tim earlier saying it's going to rain Sunday, but they've been wrong before. You never know. Arthur Hardy joins us now, the founder of the Mardi Gras Guide. How you doing, Arthur Hardy?
Oh, couldn't be more better, as we say in New Orleans, huh? Got a good night's sleep, ready to rock and roll.
I've been seeing you on Channel 12 a lot. You've been doing a lot of work with Peggy, Scott Laborde, and Andre Laborde. No, what's his name?
Yeah, Andre Laborde was a former student of mine and Brother Martin, and we worked together at WSMB about 100 years ago.
Fun fact, he and I used to read the newspaper for the blind people way back in the 70s, a long time
ago.
Really?
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Did not know that. But, yeah, it's a busy season. Then come Ash Wednesday, nobody wants me, you know, so I've got to enjoy it while I can.
So tell me about this year's Mardi Gras Guide. I know you don't own it anymore, but how involved are you with the production of it?
Oh, completely. We sold the magazine last year to George's Media Group, John George's, Tom Spicky, and Dola.com, and they're doing all the heavy lifting, ad sales, printing, distribution, but I'm completely in control of the magazine, every page,
awesome,
including mistakes.
Well, no, but you did a great job this year, as always.
Well,
I just want to talk about the guide because I didn't know we were going to get one. I bought one when I was at Rouse's, I think I saw it. But
you should know better.
Well, sometimes, you know, I just want to make sure I have it. And I like to have a copy to keep anyway, because sometimes I leave it when we're out there doing Mardi Gras coverage. Tell me about this year's guide before we get to the weekend's parades.
Well, this year we decided to include the St. Patrick's parades and Easter parades. First time ever, because Mardi Gras is so late. And we've expanded our Louisiana coverage. Subscribers to the Picayune in New Orleans and the Advocate in Baton Rouge and the Acadiana Times and Lafayette all get copies with their subscription. So we've kind of expanded the reach of the magazine. But, you know, our usual features on all the major parades and the ones, as you said, that they're preseason, but don't call them minor because there's some big parades that have already happened. And, you know, and a lot of features on some of the movers and shakers. And but, you know, I'm excited to be doing this at least one more year. That'll be our 50th anniversary next year. And after that, supposedly I'm out, but we'll see. You know, I love doing this, Tommy. You know, it's not work when you enjoy it. And I've been blessed to have a job.
Don't get out. Keep doing
it. Well, we'll
see. I don't know what the legalities are and all of that stuff, but you do a great job. You were meant to do this. And you do it well, so keep doing it. Let's talk about this weekend's parades tonight.
Well, you know, this weekend, there are more parades this weekend than next weekend, 18 parades. But specifically tonight, I'm going to start in Metairie, 725 female members, 34 floats, a really big parade. The bad news is the police have changed the viewing experiences, shall we say. There's no parking along parade routes. And traditionally, people have parked their pickup trucks there, got a barbecue pit out. Ain't going to happen anymore. And so people are going to have to park in the neighborhoods. But it's really a good parade. In Metairie, you know, Family Girl kicks off Excalibur Parade. Some of the prettiest costumes you'll ever see because the captain is also the costume makers. And they're doing a neat new throw this year. It's a giant plastic eggshell with little plush dragons inside. So that's cool. Big doubleheader Uptown Ocean, which has moved its starting time up to 5:30, 16 floats. They have handmade fans that throw up. Then the biggie, Cleopatra, 2,800 women, Tommy, all-time high, new tandem floats. They hand out decorated beverage glasses, and they've changed their route. You know, last couple of years they've had floats hit trees coming off of Jefferson to Magazine, so they're going to change the route and start a chop of Tulis and Napoleon. So we should have no issues with trees there. And these parades, in theory, should just roll back-to-back without any issues. Ala used to be tonight, and that was a problem. Third parade of a triple-header, they were ending at 1 o'clock in the morning, nobody outside there to see them. So they've moved to the spot vacated by Knicks on Wednesday, next Wednesday following Druids. So I think it's a good move for everybody. And the big concern this weekend, as you mentioned, is rain on Sunday, and that's such a great Sunday for parades, and I haven't talked to any captains yet about any contingency plans. If you get rained on or rained out, what happens? But I'll be working the phones this morning.
I bet you will. Let's take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back 6:51, 9 till 7. Arthur Hardy, founder of the Mardi Gras Guide. What's your? Do they got a nickname for you, Mister?
Nah, not Mister Mardi Gras. Blaine earned that title and died with him. But I don't care as long as they buy a magazine, right?
I did an interview years ago. Remember you and Blaine Kern together, and it was kind of like a Clint Eastwood movie with you two in there. It was like you and whoever, the Eli Wallach facing off. I'm just kidding. 6:52, 8 till 7. Traffic now. WWL. 6:57 a half. I just went to paulsimon.com, look at the ticket prices. I'm going to talk to Fifth District about a second mortgage to see if I can go to that. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Big Mardi Gras weekend coming up. So on Sunday, and I don't want to skip over Saturday, we'll get back to that. But you got Dionysia, big parade. You got Femme Fatale, Carrollton, King Arthur, Dionysius, and Slidell, Atlas, and Metairie. Do you know if there are availabilities to make these things up? Because, again, if you put one behind the other, then you got people out there till 1 o'clock.
It's going to be pretty tough for Sunday's parades, you know, unless they go at night. And I don't know, but like I said, we'll be working the phones today. One quick thing I want to mention, this is the first time this has happened in 49 years of publishing. The Mad Hatter's Parade, which is the biggest parade in Metairie, that's Dr. Joey Lacoste and his wife Gwen. Really good parade, a lot of celebrities. Anyway, first time ever in the Mardi Gras Guide, I have the wrong text next to their parade, for which I've apologized. We ran a correction in the Picayune. Fortunately, they have a full-page ad next to that.
Yeah, right next to it.
Tells you everything about it. Yeah. But talk about embarrassing for a great parade. They spend money advertising with us. What do? I'll put the wrong parade next.
Well,
it's never happened before.
Look, it happens, right?
Mistakes happen, right?
What about new in throws this year, Arthur? Are people first of all, I got to ask you this before we run out of time. Did I invent Shacus for Bacchus, or did somebody else come up with that, Shacus?
Don't know. Maybe take credit for it. Who's going to
put a mark on that? Tim, get the Secretary of State's office on the phone. Put a mark on that.
Royalties,
I want to own it.
Royalties on the way, my friend.
Instead of Bacchus, it's Shacus. right?
I love it.
There you go. Maybe I did invent it. All right, what about new in throws this year? Are they trying to be more environmentally friendly or what?
Yes, they are, and crew signature throws, float-specific throws. People don't want beads and plastic anymore, and it evolves, and you spend a lot of money if you're riding in a monogram parade. Dues is just a part of it, right?
Yeah. There's none more frustrating than you throwing beads and people haven't even been able to pick them up because they want long pearls and everything else. Thank you, Arthur. Have a great weekend.
Right.
We'll talk to you again next week, my friend. Taking a break. Coming back. WWL. It is 7:16. We're joined by Councilmember Eugene Green, who is, I saw you on Bourbon Street just now, Councilmember. How you doing?
Oh, just fine. I'm on Bourbon Street because we've moved the memorial from Bourbon and Canal to the Presbyterian. And just to continue to remember those who suffered as a result of this terrorist attack. So the memorial is now going to be permanent inside the Presbyterian. They'll have a special engagement soon that everyone will know about.
I saw you on TV, not actually on Bourbon Street. Tell me about why moving the memorial. What was the idea behind that?
Well, the main thing was to continue to remind our citizens and our nation that, one, there are victims to these terrorist attacks, and we must always remember the victims of crime. But it's also to present an opportunity for the world to see that the city of New Orleans is going to always remember those who suffer, those who are impacted by this terrorist attack, and that we're not going to change our way of life. So when you come down to the city of New Orleans, you come down to the French Quarter, for example, you're going to be reminded of the fact that New Orleans is a strong city and that we're going to remember those who need help at certain times.
Councilmember, I talked to J.P. Morrell about this, Ronald Surpass about this, because it just kind of popped into my mind how, you know, it's a Sierra One event, and we're talking about Mardi Gras after the Bourbon Street attack, but Mardi Gras always has been a soft target, if you want, for a terrorist attack, and although we look at it differently because of the Bourbon Street attack, and in no way am I trying to diminish that at all, it just suddenly struck me that, well, it's kind of naive to think that terrorists haven't looked at this as a way to attack before, whether it's by vehicle or not, because these vehicular attacks have been increasing over the years. So I don't know. Do you see a substantial change to Mardi Gras this year in terms of security? Because just because we realize it, I don't think it means the terrorists are realizing it. Do you?
Well, it's important to recognize that in this particular case, for example, the terrorist came into New Orleans twice to determine how he was going to kill people. Someone who is hell-bent on killing other people and doesn't care about his or her own lifestyle or life and the family members, they're going to find a way to hurt others. But, of course, we as those who are law-abiding citizens who care about other people, who care about the health of other people, shouldn't be coward and shouldn't think that we can't do the things that we do normally, because that's what the terrorists want you to think. They want you to think that New Orleans is going to shut down and we're not going to have the Mardi Gras, we're not going to have the festivities, and we're not going to continue to enjoy life as a city. We can't give in to them. So I tell everyone out there, no, we should not think that a terrorist who has decided he wants to hurt humanity is going to not find a way to do so. But we cannot wake up every morning thinking that that is the norm. We must go on with our lives. And, of course, one part of our life is enjoying our life.
How concerned are you about the enforcement of regulations this year? Because I got to tell you, I think it's going to be a mess, because I don't know how you control ice chests, or you make it a Sierra One event and then allow propane tanks as people bring. And I know it's illegal, but people are going to bring them anyway. Porta potties are illegal, but people, unfortunately, are probably going to bring them. That's a small tent. Who knows what's going on in there? Leaving ice chests unattended, that's as subjective can be. How do you see all this being enforced, Councilmember?
Well, Tommy, I do want to say one thing. The best enforcement is by those who want to have a good time and who are concerned about others. We know that we saw this type of incident, this terrorist incident. We know that there's a heightened security and that there's a reason for it. Maybe some of the things that have been done in the past in terms of bringing a porta potty and bringing the ice chest down and having the tent with its closed with unattended tents, maybe for a little while, especially right now, I'm going to ask our citizens to be cognizant of the fact that we are very concerned about security, and that we're concerned about security because we don't want anybody to be hurt. Do what you can to avoid. Look, I've been to parades. I went with the St. Augustine High School band when they went to France. And there's a different enjoyment of the parades there. Everybody was standing shoulder to shoulder, and they were cheering.
Where was that, Councilman?
Well, it was in France. It was for the 80th commemoration of the D-Day landing. Mm-hmm. And I was there, and we were there at parades, and they handled it maybe a little bit differently in terms of people being able to see the parades, children up front, and the like. So it's just important to recognize that we don't want to change our way of life, but that we are in a different situation right now, especially this SEER rating. It says that the entire law enforcement community of the nation is looking at New Orleans during this time and is recognizing that special work has to be done to continue to keep us safe during this period. Enjoy it. But look, enforcement is something that we have to do where it's necessary, but we have given discretion to the members of the New Orleans Police Department, in whom I have extreme confidence to be able to enforce as they feel necessary to keep our citizens safe. It's not going to be tactics where they harass people who are having a good time. The bottom line is that I'm also asking people to just be aware that this is a different time. Let's go and have a great time, but maybe on this particular year, and for a little while, we don't do some of the things that we were used to doing in the past. But I want to make this clear, but let's enjoy ourselves, because that's very important. That's
yes.
an important message that we need to send to criminals and terrorists. Enjoy ourselves no matter what.
But don't let your enjoyment be selfish and get in the way of somebody else's enjoyment. Just don't be a jerk. It's that simple. We'll pick it up. We come back. I know you want to talk about human trafficking. Eugene Green, New Orleans City Council member. 722 Traffic Now, WWL. 727, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Councilmember Eugene Green, who wanted to address and talk about human trafficking. Super Bowl's over, but the fight against that is not. Councilmember, tell me what's going on.
Well, we're always concerned about the victims of crime, and it's important to recognize that adults and children, male and female, can be subjected to sex trafficking at any time, which is basically something that we need. I think that everybody knows, but we can't focus on it enough to let people know that there are resources to support them. The reason that we had a press conference the other day was to emphasize the fact that there are many organizations in the city, up to 8 organizations that are working with victims of crime, the New Orleans Family Justice Center, the New Orleans Parish Sheriff's Office, the City of New Orleans, and other entities, Silence is Violence and the like. We are concerned that we want those who have been victimized by crime to know that there are resources that can help you. You can go to 701 Loyola Street, to the fourth floor of 701 Loyola Street, and there is a NOLA hub, which is a hub that victims of crime can go to at any time to get the support that they need. And many times it may be navigating through the system, many times it may be the resources, many times it's just information. But as a part of reducing crime in our city, it's important to help those who are victimized by crime to feel free to testify, to feel free to ask for the assistance, to feel comfortable with calling in and complaining about those who are exploiting them or who are engaged in criminal activity against them. And that's what we're focused on right now with regards to sexual trafficking. It's important to recognize that it's not just an occasional holiday thing that happens too often and throughout our city and society, and that we have to do something about it. And part of that is letting victims know that they have support.
One thing I want to talk about was the governor's homeless center that he set up. I'm not a fan of everything the governor does. However, I'm willing to give credit where credit's due. It seems as though that's working out.
I toured it just yesterday, coincidentally, and I had a chance to see that they are providing 3 meals a day, that they're providing medical care, that if you really need to go somewhere, that there's a vehicle that takes you there. The transition center was so important on a morning like this and on the evening like yesterday, and also when we had the blizzard of 2025, there would have been people who might have been just other than the fact that they had access to the homeless transition center. So, yes, you do give credit where credit is due. It may have saved lives.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time. Have a nice Mardi Gras. Councilmember Eugene Green.
To you and to all your listeners.
Thank you, sir. We'll take a break. We come back. We'll help you manage your money with Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to our news director, Dave Cohen. 7:46, 14 till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL. First big weekend of Mardi Gras. But you know what? You got to manage your money. Are you not going to have any money for beer or porta potties or anything else? Mark Rosa joins us now. President, CEO, I try to tie it in, make it relatable. I do what I can. You know what I mean? Babe Ruth didn't knock them all out of the park either, Mark Rosa. He swung and missed occasionally. You know what I mean? Patrick Mahomes throws interceptions. Jack Nicklaus has already hooked him out of bounds.
It was like a pay porta potty. Is what it sounded like where you were going.
I don't know. They got these things. I've been on this morning where people buy, and I know somebody bought one of these things, kept it in their living room, in their lobby all year long. They never picked a damn thing up. It's this little individual, like a pop-up chair, but it's covered. It's a porta potty, and then you use it, and then the problem is people don't dispose of the stuff properly, and then you got a hazmat scene on a neutral ground, and you just wonder why people do some stuff sometimes. But anyway,
yes, sir.
Go to jeffersonfinancial.org. You'll find some very valuable calculators there. Last count, I think it was 90-something of them, right?
There are quite a few.
Yeah, and they're absolutely
glad to
free.
Have them.
No, tell me about the calculators, and we'll get into international investing and more, Mark.
Well, Tommy, jeffersonfinancial.org, and you'll find many of they're all financial calculators, and they handle just about every scenario that would hit you from a money standpoint, and it's refinancing loans or lease versus buy decisions. Got a lot on 401ks, IRAs. Should you convert your IRA? And it's just, I mean, the biggest thing I find is to sit down and kind of the quiet of your own home and play with the calculator. You can't break anything. Nobody's going to ask you to log in, create a password, none of that. It's free and open to the public. You can't wear them out, and you could wear yourself out going through all the calculators, but that's okay. They'll be there when you recollect yourself. But the idea being, if that can help before you approach, you know, a refinance or buying a home or any of those types of things, you feel like you're a little bit better equipped to approach some of these decisions in life. And arithmetic or math in general is not everybody's favorite subject. Mm-hmm. So a calculator comes in awfully handy when you're trying to solve some problems that feel like you're in the deep end of the pool. So I use them all the time. I use them for my class at UNO and that's what they're built for everybody to use. And you could just use the dickens out of them. That's why they're there. But Tommy, I wanted to, you know, segue. And I'm getting a lot of emails just from follow a couple of sites. Seeking Alpha is one, and Market Watch, Wall Street Journal. Late last year, you and I were talking about some of the comments that were actually even coming from the Fed. One Fed governor said, you know, the market right now is priced for perfection. And the story behind that headline was a lot of investment banks and the Fed and analysts are thinking that our market was pretty much had gone to the extent that it could go. The prices might be getting a little bit frothy, and if it would back itself up 10, 15, 20%, you'd have a lot of people that would say, well, I'm not surprised we saw this coming. And it was, you know, what's baked into that? Well, the market hit a high right after the election. And we've said before, whether it was people that liked the results of the election or just glad it was behind us, the uncertainty was taken off the table. And so it hit a high, but it pulled back after the Fed came out and said, well, you know, we were talking about 4, 6, 8, and some people were talking about 10 interest rate reductions last year. It turned into only 4. Then they said, well, because of, you know, the way the economy is going, we might do 2 of them in 2025. Now a lot of conversation is turning to, I don't know if they're going to do any. Inflation is rearing its head. We've had GDP figures that are starting to be formulated to come in for this year. And it's like they're on a wait and see. You know, so our Monday segment, last couple of Mondays, was like the Dow was just in a trading range and it wasn't making any new ground. S&P Wednesday hit an all-time high. It was there because of some technology stocks, and those have been responsible for a lot of the market's gains. So what's now coming up is maybe we should be looking elsewhere. If the market is at a high, based on many people's opinion, being the S&P and the Dow, what I'm referring to as the market, and the catalyst for change there, two things determine stock prices, interest rates and corporate earnings. The earnings have been coming out pretty decently, fourth quarter earnings, and we've pretty much got the bulk of them that have already reported. About 60-70% of the companies reporting have beat expectations. So that's good news, and that'll keep levels up a bit if earnings are coming in decent numbers. But the interest rate front, that's waning. So what's happened in Europe is the European Central Bank has been dropping interest rates faster than our Fed. And they have more promise over there to drop interest rates a little bit further. And I've not, full disclosure, I've not gone into international investing, meaning buying funds and things, but some people that might be, one, you might be interested in that, and two, that you might feel that this is right for you, and that's what it's all about. So the S&P has come up about 4% this year, and again, this week hit an all-time high. Really, the European, if you're into, like, the index investing is probably one of the easiest ways to invest outside of our country. Because if, unless you're really, really good about doing the research in another country, in a firm, through the political risk of that country, you got other things to worry about if you leave the United States, and currency risk. You know, what is the currencies over there going to do? Because so that is going to affect your potential investment results. So the two of them, what's called the STXE 600, that's one of the index over there. It's up over 10% this year. The stocks, STOXX 600, is up about 8%. Both of them are up twice as much as our own S&P 500. So this morning's news, is it time to invest in Europe? I just got an article from Seeking Alpha about that, an article written about what we're talking about this morning. And it's probably the easiest way would be through like a 401k or a mutual fund that does an index. And it's every 401k has a menu. It's largely governed by regulation. All of our 401k plans they're very rigid in their construct. They want the idea of a 401k to be intact, but they have to offer at least one or two foreign type of funds on their menu of choice. So if you have one in your 401k, you could pull up your own 401k with a company where you work, or use the company resources can point you in that direction of what mutual funds you have at your disposal. You might find this is right for you. And it's not that you're going to unload everything that you have and put it all in European stocks, or European index funds. But it might be that you might say, well, a little diversification is not going to hurt. The European market is doing better right now. Maybe I could do a little bit better with it. But putting maybe 10%, 15%, 20% to the extent that you're comfortable in a European exposed marketplace, and it being an index that would be easy to get in and get out, and you're not buying an individual stock. Very few 401k plans. I've not known one personally, but I've have people that have said, yeah, there are 401s that you can buy an individual stock. That's rare. Most of ours, probably 99% of us that are 401k holders, we're doing it through mutual funds. So that might be a way. You could go on the jeffersonfinancial.org website. You could look at some 401k calculators and put in some of these numbers if you know, that helps you make some of those decisions. But index investing for outside of the country might be the best way to do it.
Very interesting information, valuable information. Mark, thank you. We will talk to you Monday when we'll take a look at the week ahead on Wall Street. Maybe then we can talk about Doge and cuts and everything else. But yet, S&P 500 seems to be doing fine. Wall Street loves it. We'll pick it up there Monday. Thank you, sir. Mark Rosa, President and CEO of Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union, 755, 5 till 8. Let's go ahead and look at traffic now on WWL. 8:15 now. Somebody texted in, want to know who sang that song just now. It'd be Dave Cohen and me, Tommy Tucker. Oh, you mean the original artist on the recording. That was Jesse Hill doing.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
An oopoopadoo, we asked about some hints to keep your feet cold when you go to parade this weekend. Put hand warmers in your socks. a gun again. Somebody else said put hand warmers. Problem solved, but the problem is trying to find hand warmers in a city of New Orleans. I don't know what a hand warmer is, but I would think it'd make your shoe feel or fit funny if you got to walk. Tommy, that's easy. Duck boots or shoes. Waterproof socks. You can get them at Massey's. Work great in the snow, too. So, in Buffalo, back in the day, moms always used plastic bread bags on the kids' feet, like from a Wonder Bread loaf. I guess it's bunny bread down here, so I don't know. Steve Geller joins us now, WWL Sports Director, former Saints sideline reporter who was on the sidelines, as I remember, for the infamous Christmas Eve game in Cleveland. Is that right?
Yeah, that was a fun one. Luckily, the Saints equipment staff helped all of the Saints radio crew out, gave us a bunch of, you know, cold weather gear. And honestly, the only part of me that was cold was my feet. I had double socks on and the feet warmers in. But man, that ground in Cleveland was just brutal. Other than that, though, the rest of my body was pretty well covered, even my face, from the wind, which was pretty whipping that day as well. But the feet was definitely the biggest problem. And any chance I got was standing by the big heater on the sideline. And during halftime was one of the few times I actually left the field to go inside just to try and get those tootsies warmed up.
Tell me about that young man from Rummel, that budding offensive tackle, because I got to tell you what, if my Powerball ticket comes in, I'm going to make him the highest paid name, image, and likeness player in high school football history.
Oh, man, he's loving life at Rummel. You know, going into next season, they're starting to get, you know, workouts already together, and it's really amazing when you see, you know, your kid waking up 6 a.m. to get into school early to start doing workouts. Definitely a lot more committed to the process than I was as a young man.
Tell me about the Saints. What's going on Airline Drive?
Yeah, we just got word that the, you know, Saints hired their offensive coordinator in Doug Nussmeier. Definitely one that wasn't a surprise, was linked to Kellen Moore for a while and has been around him for the longest time. They worked together with the Dallas Cowboys, the Los Angeles Chargers, and this past season with the Super Bowl-winning Philadelphia Eagles. A guy that we know here very well, was a draft pick of the Saints, gets to come back to the Superdome in New Orleans and be a part of the rebuild here. And what I think is really cool, you know, you mentioned my son playing Rummel. Well, he just gets a short drive up I-10 to Baton Rouge to go see his kiddo at LSU, Garrett Nussmeier, his son, the quarterback of the Tigers.
Yeah, but you know, I'm thinking about that. It's so close and yet so far away, because
right.
He's going to be close, but he's going to be busy. So maybe during the week you might have a chance, but I don't know. Maybe the games will work out, maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe a bye week scenario will definitely work out there. But like you mentioned, if the Saints are still busy getting ready for their Sunday matchup at home, they'll be traveling on Saturdays to wherever location they are playing. So at least they'll be close by, and like maybe during the week get to go see him at practice for the Tigers. But the game action might be a little tough for Doug Nussmeier to see Garrett.
Tell me about this strength and conditioning guy, because honestly, when you look at the guy, he looks a lot like me, quite frankly. He's in that kind of shape. But seriously, when it comes to keeping the players healthy, the Saints have had such a problem. Tell me about his background, what the idea is behind bringing him in, who he is, and could he even maybe extend to the Pelicans too?
I'm not sure if he'll get, you know, any run with the NBA team, but when you look at, you know, the Saints' issues, we know were immense last season with the injuries, and it all stemmed from Game 3, the start when we saw Eric McCoy go down against the Philadelphia Eagles. It was just a brutal go for the team. It seemed every week we were getting more and more players that were, you know, getting on the injured list, and really decimated what we saw being a highlight of the first two games of the season with so much hope and promise. And, you know, they had to do some kind of move for here. And I just think that you look at his past history now with the Rams, and they were, you know, helped them go on a Super Bowl run. They were one of the most healthiest teams in the league those three seasons, and was also known as Sean McVay's get-back coach, and really got notoriety then.
You need a get-back coach. Tell people what that is for them that don't know.
Basically, you're holding the coach back from getting on the field, so you're not getting a penalty incurred. Things get a little too animated sometimes on the sidelines, and you get all too excited as a head coach. Sean Payton did as well, and you got to stay off the field of play so you don't end up incurring a penalty for your squad. And I think it was either NFL Films or one of the Hard Knocks shows that you ended up seeing that happening with Sean McVay.
I got a problem in high school with that, too. They got a get-back coach where everybody wants to, get on the field and cheer on the team, but you don't want to get a penalty either. Let me take a break. We come back. I want to talk about Derek Carr and the press conference. I don't know if I had a chance to talk to you about this or not, but what was said, what wasn't said, what the Saints' backfield's likely to look like next year, the offense, et cetera. And look, nobody knows. I know we're just kind of gazing into the stars here, but I'm just wondering. We're talking to Steve Geller, WWL Sports Director, about the Saints. You got any questions, comments? 504-260-1870. NFL Draft will be here. We'll talk free agency as well. 822 Traffic, WWL. 826, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Steve Geller, WWL Sports Director, talking about the Saints and the moves they've made with Kellen Moore and Garrett Nussmeier, who is going to be the – not Garrett Nussmeier. Yes. Wait, I'm confused.
Doug Nussmeier.
That's right. Doug Nussmeier, who is going to be the offensive coordinator and the strength and conditioning and wellness coach, I think they're calling him.
Yeah, Ted Rath.
And who else did we get?
They made a lot of sweeping changes on the offensive side of the ball. Bringing back, running backs coach that was with the Lions, not the Lions, the New York Giants this past season. We saw that, he decided to take a break and try his hand in New York. Things just didn't work out there for Joel Thomas, who's been around this squad so long. I think bringing him back to New Orleans was definitely a comfort move for a guy like Alvin Kamara as well, who has spoke highly of Joel Thomas in the past, and making your stud running back happy and keeping him, well on the roster is a good idea. Quarterbacks coach, there's another QB in the mix. We saw, we have Kellen Moore, QB, Doug Nussmeier was a QB, and Scott Tolzien, a former NFL QB, is joining the staff as the Saints QB coach. He was with the Dallas Cowboys. So, once again, those connections with Kellen Moore are pretty big there. Keith Williams is being retained as the wide receivers coach. That's one that's sticking with this Saints staff, been retained, and we saw him do a good job with some of the young wide receivers last season, was talked about highly as well. Brandon Nugent back with the black and gold. He was with the Seahawks as the assistant O-line coach this past season. Now he's back as the O-line coach for the Saints this go-around. A familiar name, in last name at least, Chase Haslett has become the tight ends coach for the Saints. He was the Cowboys' offensive quality control coach. We know his dad, Jim Haslett, spent time with the black and gold as head coach here for some time. And one that's we haven't found an exact title yet, T.J. Paganetti was the Eagles' assistant O-line coach and run game specialist for Philly, and his title really is unclear right now what he's going to do for the Saints. And we do know as well that Phil Galliano, the assistant special teams coordinator, has been elevated to the special teams coordinator role. So a little bit of familiarity there makes sense if you're going to keep, your kicker and punter too from last season, not having to make changes there. A new coordinator might want to bring in their own staff. Now it's all about what's going to happen on the defensive side of the ball. And that first shoe that's got to drop is definitely who's going to be the defensive coordinator, fill out the staff. And the favorite right now, Brandon Staley, former Chargers head coach. He was the 49ers assistant head coach last season, has a relationship with Kellen Moore as well. And what's interesting with that too is, if the Saints go about this route, it would likely signal a change in scheme going from a 4-3 defense to a 3-4, So many questions there come with personnel as well.
Be interesting to watch it unfold. I know free agency starts March 12th, I think it is. So that'll maybe give us a little glimpse. Thank you, Steve Geller, WWL Sports Director. We're going to take a break. We come back, we'll talk to Hans Liljeberg, Jefferson Parish Council member, about the big family cross celebration that's happening. A lot of fun for everybody. More when we return. Right now, time for WWL First News. 8:47, 13 till 9 now. I was on Vets yesterday, and I was watching them set everything up for Family Grow, and you could just tell something big was about to happen. Hans Liljeberg joins us now, Jefferson Parish Council member. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. How are you?
I'm okay. Tell me about Family Grow this year.
So Family Grow this year is going to be bigger and better than ever. We have some local acts like Zebra tonight starting at 4. We have Imagination Movers playing tomorrow, and we have Amanda Sharp playing Sunday. We have some national acts coming as well all weekend. It's gonna be a great weekend.
How can people best experience Family Grow, Hans?
Well, the best thing to do is to buy the VIP passes, and you can find that online through the Jefferson Convention and Visitors Bureau. But it's a free show. You know, you don't have to do that. You can you can get in. The seating's good. It's not, you know, horribly crowded. Festival atmosphere, live free music. I mean, it's a great show.
So with the VIP Royal Pass, you're going to get a 3-day ticket. You're going to get a special VIP area, back of stage access, front of stage views, limited food and drinks, and the use of a comfort station. That's for people that are 6 and older. What about some of the food that you're going to have there?
The food is going to be, so in the VIP section, you get food. It's, you know, it's light fare.
No, I understand. I meant in general, though, for people.
In general, they're going to have various food trucks out there. You know, it's your typical fare. F-A-I-R, F-A-R-E.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's all good stuff, all good local Louisiana stuff.
Tell me about the plans on Sunday. Have you guys made any alternative plans or any ideas of what to do on Sunday with the weather they're forecasting?
So I was listening to you earlier, and I agree with you. I'd like to weigh in on Dave Cohen's evaluation if it does rain on Sunday. So we haven't, you know, we're just right now, I think it's a little early.
Wait. For people that didn't hear, I was saying that Dave needs to do a better job with the weather forecast and that his employee evaluation was coming up and what was his plan to deal with it. Thank you, Hans, for listening, but go ahead. What happened,
You're welcome.
With the rain on Sunday?
You know, we're waiting to see right now. You know, last year, unfortunately, we had a deluge on Sunday. We made it all the way through until the last band, Cheap Trick, started playing. They played probably 5 or 6 great songs, and then they had to shut it down because of the rain. So the plan right now is to forge ahead. You know, we're gonna have to wait and see if you know, it's difficult to move these things up and back because of the, you know, the band schedules and contracts. But you know, we're gonna do our best to plow forward.
Somebody I know used to be a big Zebra fan, and they would always pronounce it Zebra. 8:51 more with Hans Liljeberg when we come back. We're going to talk about some of the differences in terms of traffic, some additional security that's going to be in place for Family Grow this year. And if you have any questions or comments, 504-260-1870, 8:51, 9 till 9, traffic now, WWL. 8:57, 3 till 9, Zebra! They're going to be taking the stage 4 o'clock this afternoon at Family Grow, followed by Ambrosia featuring John Ford Coley, then En Vogue, then tomorrow Imagination Movers, Rock Show Nola, The Journey Experience, Debbie Gibson, Mark Martel, One Vision of Queen, then Justin Moore, then on Sunday, hopefully River Dan, Timothy Wayne, Amanda Shaw, Gary Barrett, and Gary LaVox of Rascal Flatts. So Hans Liljeberg, Jefferson Parish Council member, when it comes to Sunday and the weather, somebody texted in and wants to know, and it is interesting, who makes the call on this? Who's running the show, producing the operation?
The Jefferson Convention of Visitors Bureau pretty much puts it on.
Mm-hmm.
They work in conjunction with the parish on what to do. I'm sure it's, you know, we consult on what happens with the parades and so forth.
But, and the sheriff, too, you know, I'm sure has a hand in it, make sure everybody's safe, right?
Of course.
So if the show can go on, I think it's safe to say it will.
Absolutely. I mean, I have one of my daughters lives in Fredericksburg, Texas. Mm-hmm. She is due in 2 weeks, and she's a huge Rascal Flatts fan. She's on her way to New Orleans right now so that she can go see Gary Leavox on Sunday.
Hans,
so I'm counting on no rain.
Look, take two of these and call me in the morning, all right? Because you're going to need some with a perspective. First grandchild or not?
No, this is my third.
But still, first for her?
First for her.
Uh-oh. Well, everything's going to be fine. Just be positive.
I told her to bring her medical records.
Would you prefer she stay in Texas? I'm just curious, as a dad.
She's actually moving back now that she's having a baby.
Well, there you go.
Back.
Well, good for y'all. Hey, real quick, when it comes to security, what do people need to know?
So that's going to be a lot different from last year, obviously, because of what happened in New Orleans on January 1st. You will have to go through a metal detector. Bags are subject to search. You shouldn't bring any large items or large bags in. You won't be allowed to. Whatever you do bring in is subject to search. Veterans Boulevard will be blocked off in both directions from Causeway to Severn 2 hours before Family Gras starts.
And the easiest thing, just go to Family Gras, search that. You'll go to visitjeffersonparish.com, find out everything. I might just see you out there, Hans. Have a great time, okay?
I'll be there.
And good luck, good luck, Grandpa. Hans Liljeberg, Jefferson Parish Council member. For the most part, of course, sometimes they do this, they call it vanity sizing, where you think you want to wear a 30, it's actually like 34 inches, but I don't think what I'm getting does that. Yeah. Ian McNulty, have you ever bought a pair of pants on Facebook or not?
No, sir, I have not.
I don't know. Yeah. Well, because you know why? I can't buy off the rack. I got to have everything altered. So recently I found places that sell pants that fit me, and I don't have to have them altered. Now whenever I see it, I grab them, and I got a closet full of pants, and I don't know what to do with them.
You know what my size is, Tommy? Extra medium. That's what I am.
Are you really extra medium? It's a good size.
Sometimes double X.
Good size king cake to get as well. We talk eating and drinking with Ian McNulty at this time of day and this time of week, and that's what we're doing right now. Happy Mardi Gras, Ian McNulty.
Oh, yeah. We are into it, baby. I'm ready for this cold weather to fizzle off and for New Orleans to truly embrace the next run of, what is it, Czechs watch, 10 days until Ash Wednesday brings the curtain on it all.
Until St. Patrick's Day and St. Joseph's Day. And, you know.
Yeah. Truly a great time to be in New Orleans. And this is the time of year where I get a lot of requests for late night dining, mm-hmm. right? Or late night food in general. You know, dining may be too fine of a point on it. But you're out late, your daily rhythms are a little different, your schedules are different. People are going to balls downtown, they're getting out. Those balls were kind of boring. They sat through it. They need a proper meal and a good drink. Or they're out in the parades, they're partying, and, you know, they waited for the parade to get over until they left. So now they're, it's later than the normal dinner hour, and they're hungry. And that was my spur, guys, to take a look at the landscape of late-night dining around New Orleans. And it won't be a surprise to anyone to learn that it's changed greatly over the last few years. I mean, it's changed enormously if we want to rewind the tape back to the pre-Katrina era, you know, the reign of the Hummingbird Grill and La Paniche and such legends of late night. But since the pandemic, there's been really almost a precipitous collapse in late night dining. I mean, you could almost say that it nearly went extinct there for a while. And there's some really compelling reasons for why that happened. But as I did my research and started digging into it, what I've found are signs of a comeback, of a bit of renewal in the ranks of late night food options, from dining to simply stuff in your face, and a really surprising range in some cases. And so they've got a pair of stories on NOLA.com now that give the deep dive, one kind of laying out why all this happened and where we stand now, and another sort of neighborhood by neighborhood guide, a running list that we'll be adding to, by the way, of restaurants and bars, everything from your bar burger to oysters and caviar after midnight, available around the city. So it's a topic that comes up a lot this time of year, and happy to dive into it.
It seems like a lot changed after Katrina, not just with restaurants and where to eat 24 hours, but grocery stores, too. They used to have 24-hour grocery stores and drug stores. I don't know if that's a national thing or just here after Katrina, but a lot changed then.
Yeah, it certainly did. And it was the full stop effect of Katrina. Mm-hmm. There's enough time between then and now, Tommy, that, you know, I feel like sometimes we do have to remind and explain mm-hmm. to people that it wasn't just a massive hurricane that hit and knocked out the power and ripped off roofs and such and did all that, but that the levee failures that flooded the city and had the water sit there and forced the evacuation of a major American city was really unprecedented in modern times, mm-hmm. Almost biblical. And the grand restart that it took to make all that happen was lengthy and arduous and accomplished by great grit and heart of the people who did it. But it took a long time. And so things that have been running smoothly, more or less, or in their own rattletrap fashion for a long time, getting them back started again, some very difficult and sometimes impossible. And New Orleans is a place filled with quirky, interesting joints. And unfortunately, we lost a lot of them in that switchover. The pandemic is actually a similar dynamic. Just look at restaurants. All restaurants had to close on a dime with the closure orders. Reopening was not so quick. It only came in phases and limited by whatever phase they were in or what they felt comfortable with, what they wanted to do, what the health situation was, and thus an undulating, uneven course. And so restaurants that were normally open 24 hours found themselves reopening for one shift. And then so you build on that, you expand on that, you see where the demand is, some dining habits change, night owls turned into early birds, and then, another knock-on effect of this all is things have gotten much more expensive. It's more expensive for the restaurants to stay open that late, and maybe not worth it if it's slow, and it's more expensive for people to live their lives. And so maybe they're not splurging on that burger and cocktail at 11 o'clock. After all, maybe they're just cooking a frozen pizza when they get home. Maybe they're not going out as much. And so the people who work late night shifts out of the restaurants and bars, which make up a huge part of the late night bar customer base themselves, maybe they didn't make as much money. And so maybe they're not feeling as flush to go out and have that burger and drink and such. But that's how we got to the situation of very little late night dining. What I'm seeing is more restaurants and bars expanding those hours, testing the waters, and finding more people eager to be at their doors, including what I mentioned, that customer base. It's not just people who are like out till 3 in the morning and are hammered and need a burger to sober up. It's people who are working until midnight or 2 in the morning, whether that's at restaurants, bars, or hospitals, or public safety, what have you. The great all-night diners and dives of New Orleans, when we walked in, they were filled with EMS people and people in scrubs from different hospitals and such. It's that whole nighttime economy of the city that needs to eat and might actually like a drink after work, too, even if they have to work for that 3 in the morning. So one of the spurs for this was Buffa's Lounge, the great Buffa's Lounge on Esplanade Avenue, trimmed in neon. They've gone back to 24/7 service, including, keeping the kitchen open the entire time. Breakfast menu from check out these hours, Tommy, from midnight to noon. That's their breakfast. That's their breakfast shift. And it struck me as, okay, well, that's good. That's a place that was 24 hours, is getting back into it, and made me look around. And I'm telling you, there's upscale options. There's places in the suburbs. There's your classic dives. You expect to see Tom Waits scribbling lyrics on a swivel stool next to you. And there's, upscale places that feel like you're dining at a bistro long after the chairs have been put up on the tables at actual bistros around town. It's an interesting time to take a look at it because of the way Carnival stretches our hours. And I think people who start poking around will find a lot more available to them. They don't necessarily have to just hit the drive-thru or go to the chain diners that are, of course, operating 24/7 based on their structures.
As you said that, I wonder if Taco Bell, the dreaded Taco Bell, has anything to do with that, with the late-night hours and just like you're talking about with the economy and people just looking for something to stuff in their face as opposed to maybe having a real decent meal?
Yeah, that's part of it too. I mean, those are big companies have the economies of scale and they figured out how to do a lot of that stuff. But, you know, I want the local character, you know.
Oh, I do too. You know what I miss? What I used to love, the coffee shop in the Fairmont, I think it was. Is that the Fairmont that you can get to from two streets, one side or the other? And a coffee shop used to be 24 hours, and that used to be a great way to go, a great place to go late at night and have some of those alcohol-absorbing waffles or whatever you wanted, scrambled eggs or you name it. What was the name?
Yeah, that's right. That's the Fairmont then, now called the Roosevelt.
Yeah.
And actually, that's a good cue, because right around the corner from there is a great late-night spot that's a good example of this variety I'm talking about. It's called Cleo's Mediterranean Cafe and Grocery. It's right on the corner there by the Orpheum, too, so good if you're getting out of the Orpheum. And you walk in there, and it's like a little deli, a little counter service kind of place with falafel and salads and roasted eggplant and kebabs, imported candy from around the world, stocked in the shelves everywhere. Used to be 24/7, now is open like from until about 5 a.m. So
close enough, yeah.
But interesting, important topic. I'll preview this by saying, like, we've seen the headlines, like, the crime rates are declining in the city and the suburbs alike, and sometimes faces it to historically low levels. But security is a concern for a lot of the restaurant operators. It's, when I talk to them, say, hey, what about, later hours, 24/7? You know, that it's one of the top things that comes out of their mouth. So, that is still a very heavy shadow over all of this also. So, while things are improving on that front, perhaps it'll have the effect of seeing more places stay open and keep the lights on and keep the doors open.
Let me take a quick break. We'll pick it up. We come back. We'll talk about some of Ian McNulty's favorite places to eat and drink late at night. And also, I want you to text me yours on the Oquinard Jeweler Talkin' text line at 504-260-1870. Maybe places that you used to go to that you miss and aren't there anymore, or some of your favorite places to go. And if you have any questions about eating or drinking in New Orleans, Sunday is going to be a cold, rainy day. Maybe you're looking for some good comfort food or something like that. Give me a text, 504-260-1870. I'll pass them along to Ian McNulty. He covers food and dining culture for the Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate. I'm Tommy Tucker. This is WWL. 9:27 now, best time of the week, talking to Ian McNulty, covers food and dining culture for the Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate. He's focused on some late-night places to eat. Aren't as many as there used to be, but I guess, Ian, they're making a comeback? Maybe?
Yeah. It's tentative. It's tentative. You know, these things, late-night doesn't happen over.
I'm seeing a picture here of and you can get to that in a second, the Swamp Room. Charlize Blasio, 20-plus-year patron of the Swamp Room. I'm guessing she may have had something to drink when you took that picture or not.
That was my man, the great David Grunfeld, who snapped that one.
Uh-huh.
So you would have to address the condition of the subject. But The Swamp Room is open, Tommy, until 3:30 in the morning. Now, that is good intel to have. That's the classic New Orleans bar burger, right? Mm-hmm. The kind that you get at Port of Call, probably created the template. Harbor nearby also opened very late in Metairie, Oscars, the Beach Corner, Canal Street where meets Canal Boulevard. It just knowing that it's not just like, getting out of the party or whatever, or getting off of your ship. Like I said, sometimes you come in off a late flight, it was a hell of a flight. Maybe you don't want to go straight home. You don't want to tuck into a booth and get one of those burgers in front of you and just mellow out for a little bit. Like that's another one of the great utilities of that place. But
Tim tells me a great hot fudge sundae at the Swamp Room. He gets them all of the time. Tim's our man about town. He could be the successor to you, Ian McNulty, Tim Zimmer, who goes all about these places and eats and drinks. He says they got a great hot fudge sundae, hot fudge cookie sundae. Which I would imagine would absorb some alcohol a little bit or two. But you know what I'm thinking, too? You almost have to divide it into places where you want to stop drinking and get breakfast, or maybe you want to keep drinking and have a burger, right?
Yeah, sure. And when you take a look at the story and the list, you can see that, there's a lot of places to get a burger out there, especially in the French Quarter, in Metairie, like we mentioned. over on the West Bank. I mean, Vinny's Sports Bar and Grill is open until 7 in the morning. Burgers and wings, that kind of thing. But then, you know, if you're looking for something, like I said, maybe you are coming out at an event. Maybe you still have the number one clothes on, you know. You're
Mardi Gras ball. Up. You might be coming home from a ball.
Right, right. Yeah. You've got the Bullany Tavern. It's the lounge next door to Lillette, that restaurant that Taylor Swift just put newly on the map for some. Bullany Tavern is their more casual but still very upscale lounge, mid-century modern sort of Mad Men vibe inside. You know, food until midnight, 1 a.m. on the weekends, and nice food. They do have a burger, actually, but, you know, mussels and fries, caviar, oysters, that sort of thing. Over on St. Charles Avenue, the Della Chase. I mean, that's the place that raised the bar for bar food back in the pre-Katrina era. Still going strong, almost 30 years in, perhaps, almost certainly 25 years. You know, that's a place that has variable hours now, which is kind of the case at a lot of these places. You ask them, okay, what's your last call for the kitchen? They say, well, we play it by ear. We play it by ear. We see what the demand is night to night. But you can reliably go in there after 10 o'clock and get, like I called it before, bistro-worthy food after the bistros have closed down. And then there's new additions that are building in these later night hours. A restaurant you and I have talked about before, just opened last fall, is 34. That's Emeril Lagasse's Portuguese restaurant. Modern, stylish, upscale. They switch over to a happy hour menu from, I want to say, 10 to midnight. Mm-hmm. And they also have a DJ. One of the booths in the dining room is actually a DJ station. So it kind of changes the vibe a little bit, you know, as the hour gets later. Another example of that would be the Bar Car. Okay, that's a newer place on Metairie Road. It used to be the Metri Cafe, a classical dive by the railroad tracks. They switch over to a late night menu. I want to say again, probably 10 to midnight, definitely until midnight. That's the time frame for that. A shorter menu, the kitchen can field it, but available to you until midnight. And so these are kind of the steps that places are taking to gauge demand, maybe get people back into the rhythm of like, okay, it's after 10 o'clock, I can still go out. Now, caveat to that story is sometimes it's surprising where you can land after normal dinner hours. And just this week, as I'm in the midst of writing this guide of late night spots, I had a visitor in town and we head out for dinner later than usual. No problem, I think. I've got this late night thing locked down. But it was a Wednesday, and a lot of the places that I know had midnight hours weren't open on Wednesday. We wanted something really New Orleansy because we had a visitor from out of town, not just another bar burger. So here we were at almost 9:30, I want to say, maybe even minutes after that. We see the lights are on at Vincent's Italian Cuisine on St. Charles Avenue. All right, we'll give it a shot. We walk in, no question. They're open. They're open till 10. That means they're seating. And we sat down and had a magnificent meal on a chilly night of red sauce, cannelloni, meatballs, dark red wine from Italy, a martini to start things off. I mean, it was really nice. And that was not a place that qualifies as late night to me because they close at 10.
What time was that, Ian?
We walked in around, I want to say, let's check the watch. I think it was 9:38. You know, right,
there you go. That brings up a question, which is, and so a lot of people are texting this in, if a restaurant says they closes at X, what's really the latest that you should go in? Because I don't feel comfortable going in a restaurant closes at 10 like you did at 9:30, but you say that's okay.
Well, you play it by ear. I walked in there about 30% confident we will get sat down. And I fully expected them to say, the kitchen just closed. Mm-hmm. It often is a play it by ear kind of situation. You can call first, I suppose, but I do respect a place that says, lists, we are open till 10, we're open till 10. I mean, I think that's fair.
Yeah, because what does that mean, actually? Does it mean if they don't want you to come in before 10, then they should close at 9, right?
Mm-hmm. A good example of this is a late night place, which I was actually surprised to see put on my list. Fresco. It's on Maple Street near the universities. Uh-huh. They close at 1, but actually they close at 12:45. So at 12:45, they're taking their last order. When, in fact, they probably turned the door to sign to closed at 1. Uh-huh. So it's a pizza place, lavash wraps, Italian dishes, that kind of thing, popular with the college crowd up there. So I understand the text. There's not a probably an overall universal answer to it, and that's why it helps to kind of get to know a place, right? Like you don't like to walk into a restaurant, you know, 5 minutes before they listed closing time and see them vacuuming and putting up the chairs and say, no, start it all up again. I just don't want to be that guy, right? Mm-hmm. And they may not take you anyways, which was why going into Vincent's was a pleasant surprise. I mean, the hospitality couldn't have been better, couldn't have been more professional. It was fun and cheeky in New Orleans. The food was great. And we left counting that as a major win for late night dining, even though it does not technically qualify, in my book anyway, as late night dining. But sometimes that spirit of hospitality wins out.
Mm-hmm. Somebody's looking for a classic. I remember going to this place on the West Bank. Pogo's was the name of it. It was in a hotel, and it was after a St. Patrick's Day parade meeting. And I wasn't driving, but I remember having pancakes, and I was pouring the syrup onto the pancakes and was running down the knife that was on the side of the plate onto my pants. And I thought it was the funniest thing in the world because, of course, you know, I shouldn't have been that drunk, but I was. People are looking for places like where you can have that kind of breakfast kind of thing without necessarily drinking and maybe some coffee to get ready to go to work.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, that is the classic diner, and it's a bit of a dying breed. I mean, on the West Bank, coffee and definitely qualifies for that. It's a Marrero. That's swivel stools, kind of a donut shop. They do a really good king cake, by the way, a donut king cake. Over on this side, you've got TikTok Cafe in Metairie, right mm-hmm. on Causeway, a busy intersection right there off the highway. So that makes a lot of sense. I wish I had a few more of them in New Orleans for you. You know, Betsy's used to be really good mm-hmm. with that on Canal Street by the hospitals, but their hours have been curtailed, you know, ever since the pandemic, I suppose, maybe even before. That's the other strategy, Tommy, is to find places that open very early because, you know, it depends how late you are out, but find you a good breakfast place that opens at 5 a.m., 6 a.m. If you're still out at that hour, you're catching them fresh on the other side of things.
Somebody texted in with the cold weather coming in on Sunday and rainy. They say since we can't go to the parades, and look, nothing's been canceled, but it's not looking good. They're looking for some good Italian hearty food.
Oh, yes. Oh, and first of all, this reminds me, weeks ago, maybe even months ago, a caller asked about something and it stumped me, but I've got an answer for that, which fits this theme, not exactly, but stick with me. The caller was looking for chili, good place for really good chili. Parkway Tavern. I had since that call, it had been in my mind, and I went to Parkway. I wasn't looking for chili, but there it was smack dab on the menu right under my nose. I got it. It was terrific. Chopped onions and cheese.
And where was that?
Very comforting. Parkway Bakery.
Parkway, okay.
Yeah. So, you know, po' boys and chili. If you're looking for that, put that on your list. Hopefully the caller from long ago will hear that. Thank you. Like I said, with Vincent's, that heartiness of red sauce. I mean, gosh, take your pick. Last time we went to Mandina's, knocked it out of the park with meatballs and red sauce, plus some fried chicken and onion rings. I'm partial to Genduza's in Kenner and Rivertown there. Big, hearty portions. They're going to feed you twice. You've got, it's your classic Italian red sauce joints.
What about Venetia's on the West Bank? How are they doing? Do you know?
Sorry, which one's that?
Venetia's on the West Bank?
Yeah, oh, booming. Yeah, that's okay. A great example. The city Venetia's in Gretna there. Took over the old Tony Mandina's. No relation to Mandina's city. Same menu, bigger space, banquet space. They've got the lights all lit up now. If you're passing the West Bank Expressway, you can see the Italian colors tracing the exterior of it. That's been what a slam dunk that was. To lose Tony Mandine is sad, but, you know, nice for the family to move on to their next chapter and retire. But for Venetia's to step in and kind of double down with what they do, that's a great win.
Somebody's looking for a Jamaican food, Ian.
Oh, yeah. It's a good time for that. We've got a lot of good players. 14 Parishes is one that's always top of my list. Two locations, one on Oak Street. One on Patterson in Algiers, right by the levee. it's traditional, a lot of heart and soul, a lot of personality and character, great cocktails, great rum drinks, which you don't always find at your typical island joints. Some Boswell's in Mid-City is kind of the classic hole-in-the-wall joint. This Jamaican Jerk House in the Bywater, Ninth Ward area on St. Claude, also excellent. Those would be top picks.
I was driving around old Algiers last Saturday, as a matter of fact. I like to just go out and drive around, and it is amazing what has happened at the point in old Algiers, if you've not been there lately, not just in terms of restaurants, but people that have moved in, real estate, et cetera. There's something going on there.
Oh, yeah. Algiers Point is really feels good right now. And as usual in New Orleans, it's the restaurant and hospitality scene leading the way. If you step off the ferry, which could have a huge impact on how that area develops, visitors coming over and supporting those businesses. You've got the new Nighthawk pizzeria, Neapolitan-style wood fire pizza next to the classic Dry Dock Cafe around the corner. Congregation Coffee is back. I mentioned 14 Parishes. You've got Barracuda Tacos tucked into the neighborhood there. If you go a little further off, Plume Algiers, a fantastic mom-and-pop Indian restaurant that's always worth a visit. And boy, talk about cold weather coming in. Indian food has its own comfort food quotient that's off the charts. Might not be the first thing everyone thinks about if you've got Italian or, roast beef po'boys on your mind. But you tuck into a gently spicy, richly flavored curry over some aromatic basmati rice. That's taken me there.
So you mentioned Lillette, and before Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift dined there, Jennifer Coolidge and Joe Montana were seen dining there, which brings up a kind of interesting story. I saw a young lady in an elevator, and I said, "My, you look like Jennifer Coolidge." And she said, "Really? I don't know who that is." I said, "Yeah, Google it." Well, I was talking about Jennifer Connelly, not Coolidge, so I imagine she's still angry at me about that. But anyway... Thank you, Ian McNulty. That's why you should never address women in the elevator at all. Ian McNulty covers food and dining culture for the Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate. We'll take a break. Come back. Get you some weekend winners with JR here on WWL. 941, 19 till 10. Traffic now, WWL. Took a week off after the Super Bowl, and rightfully so. He earned it. JR joins us right now with Take in Vegas. You'll hear him tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock here on WWL. JR, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Tommy. First off, happy Basketball Friday. But listen, I don't know how much it is time off when I've got to spend time with my wife and the kids, man. I just...
Bite your tongue. That's gold. That's the best time you can spend in your life, and you know it. Let me tell you something
real quick. Thank God she doesn't listen to the show.
Yes. Let me tell you something real quick. I went heavy on the over on the Super Bowl, and look, it made the game exciting, okay, because there was something to watch for. It wasn't a blowout for me, not if you bet the over. Yeah, it was your free on-air pick. You nailed it. Thank you, JR. The lake house is completed.
I appreciate it. I want to know when my invitation's in the mail. I want to come and see it.
Yeah, it's pretty exclusive.
Here's what I'm doing. First off, college basketball has been ridiculous. I mean ridiculous. Every year I always hit pretty close to 70%. My top plays right now are well over 70% for the year. I am making clientele money hand over fist. I'm not just saying it. Hopefully you guys can hear it in my voice as true as it is. I've got a guy that just crossed over $1 million, and he started with me in October. If you're serious about making money, step one, let me give you a big winner, okay? I have my NBA game of the week going off tonight. It is yours absolutely free. I'll send it to you via text message. Here's what you got to do. Text the word WIN, that's W-I-N, to the number 545454. When you do that, you're going to get hit right back with another text, which is going to give you my NBA game of the week free of charge. Again, it'll come in via text message. No strings attached, you get the game. Now, after you get in the game of the week in the NBA via text message, when you text WIN to 545454, get in with me. Make sure you get in with one of the deals. There's so many different ways to get in, but the best is to do an introductory deal. It's less than $100, $99, and we'll give you a whole week of service. Put on display what we do here, and I'm telling you, once you see what we're capable of, not just with the games, but with money management, when I give you a strategy where you're going to say, "Oh my God, why didn't I think of that?" you'll know why we're worth our weight in gold. So again, text the word WIN to 545454, and right back at you, I'll give you the NBA Game of the Week absolutely free, and it'll come to you via text message.
You know, I was thinking about you the other day, because I was trying to take a nap, and a neighbor had the grass guy over, and he was weed-eating, and I was thinking about your approach when it comes to money management and picking your shots. You don't just go in and just, like, spray weed killer all over everything or weed eat everything. What you do is you walk through the yard and you look and it's like, there's a delicate little thing I can pick, or there's a nice little bet that I like. That's pretty much what you do, isn't it?
You know, I've never thought of it like that. I mean, that's an incredible, that's a pretty good analogy right there, because we're looking for the absolute best of the best. We're not just out there weed whacking everything and picking up the scraps and giving it to you. We're really spending our time. And one of the things I think that people love about doing business with us is that I'm not loading you up with action. So it's not like I've got you betting 3, 4, 5 games a night. We're looking for one game every day. And now some days there's absolutely nothing. There might be 3 days in a row I tell you to take a pass. Most people that are looking at this to where they like making the money, they respect that. They're like, you know what? I'm not in this just for the action and the entertainment. I want to win. I want to make money. If there's not something there, then I'm not looking to pull the trigger. So then there's also some guys that'll hit me with 20 messages. Really? Nothing? Am I going to get something? Is there anything tonight? And I got to text them back. Well, do you want me to just chuck you a game, or do you really want to win? So on average, my top plays, my biggest clients, we're getting anywhere from 4 to maybe 6 games in a week. Very few days do we have even multiple games, okay? It's normally one game at a time. Now, there are days, some Saturdays, where I have 2, even 3 games in a day, which is a huge, huge plus. But for the most part, we're looking for that one game, sometimes 2, that we can really lock in on. That's why my percentage is so high, because we do have the right resources and experience on hand to be able to do this at a really high level and to be able to hit. And there's no guarantees, right? We're never going to sit here and say, hey, I have a game that can't lose. That's stupidity. But I will say that we win always, just like we lose, in streaks, okay? We're going to win 6, 7 games in a row. We may lose 2 or 3 in a row. But if you use the right strategy, we're using a progression that is making a fortune off those 6 or 7 wins in a row, and we're losing minimally on that 1, 2, or 3 games that we lose.
It's all about the math, the money management moving toward March Madness, right?
Absolutely. Listen, you got to get yourself set up to have a big tournament. I'm going to be in Vegas for that first and second round like I am every year. Biggest score is made of the whole year for consecutive days during that first and second round. So I'm telling you now, let me build you a bankroll over the next couple of weeks to the point where you're really ready to do something big for the tournament and make a really big score. That's what I do for all my clients every year. Text the word WIN right now to the number 545454. I'm going to hit you right back with an NBA game that I'm telling you, it's a blowout winner. It's my NBA game of the week. It's absolutely free. Again, text the word WIN to 545454. Do we have time for me to give a free play?
Yeah, absolutely. You better believe it.
All right, I'm not going to give you some no-name team tonight. There's a matchup I really like, a good rivalry with Michigan State going to Michigan, Ann Arbor, to take on the Wolverines. I'm going to tell you this. Michigan, although we've won 6 in a row, of the 6 games that they've covered, not a single one of them was by more than 4 points. They've been in very tight games. They can very well be 0-6 right now over their last 6. But they're still sitting pretty. They're 20-5, ranked 12th right now in the country. And Michigan State is a better team top to bottom. Not only are they a better team, but they've got more depth. And Izzo loves to turn it on right now. This is when he wants momentum to build going into the big dance. And I'm going to tell you, not only do I expect Michigan State to cover what is going to be a very tight game, but my likelihood here is they win this game outright between 3 and 6 points. So get in Michigan State. That will be a real exciting game, but really expect that the Spartans are going to come out on top in this matchup. So get in Michigan State, take that 2.5 points, and run to the sports book with it. But again, guys, I got a huge game that you can tie that into in the NBA tonight. It's my NBA game of the week. I'm giving it to you for free. Text the word WIN to 545454. I'll send it back to you via text message absolutely free. Sorry about my voice being a little off today, by the way. I don't know if you picked up on that, but did a lot of radio in the studio yesterday. We're a little strained today, and I can tell you this much, guys. I've got a huge weekend lined up for my clientele. So if you get involved with us, you're going to have a really big, big weekend too. So again, text WIN to 545454. At a bare minimum, let me give you my NBA game of the week for free. And Tommy, as always, I appreciate you having me on, man. Guys, be safe, have fun. Let's go out there and let's make some money.
I can always find somebody to sing, not pick games. Thank you, JR.